everyone. Welcome to Choice Says. Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choice Says. I am your host, Christine Choi. Today, I talk to my friend, Chrissy Motzni. We talk about addiction and mental health, which coincidentally goes hand in hand with my last episode about addiction. It was not planned, so kind of amazing how things work out. I think this is a really great listen, not only because of her experiences dealing with those things, but also because she's a counselor and she is dealing with people with addiction and mental health issues day in and day out. And she's been in that world for a very long time. And it was kind of nice to hear both sides from her, right? Because she's been in their shoes as well as being on the other side now, how to support the people that are going through what they're going through. I hope you guys enjoy. Hello, Chrissy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Chrissy, where are you calling from?
I am in Denver, Colorado.
Woohoo!
Whoop whoop.
How's the weather?
It's really nice and sunny outside today, and I've been hitting the books, so I've only gotten to enjoy it a little bit this morning.
Yeah, well, that's good. At least you got a little bit of sun today.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get started. You know, I was thinking about how we met, and I have no idea.
You know, when I've listened to other podcasts, I thought about that same thing. I was like, how did we meet? When was it? I'm pretty sure it was in like freshman or sophomore year of high school.
Yeah.
And I think it was through a mutual friend, through Allie or somebody.
Probably. I don't know. But so we met in high school.
Yeah. Mutual friends. We met in high school.
Yeah, exactly. I just did a couple interviews with Melissa and Mike, and both of them I actually met in chat rooms. Remember the AIM chat rooms?
Oh my gosh, yes.
But I don't think we met through that. So we actually met in real life.
Yeah, I think we met in real life.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess with that said, we can't really get into the first impression stuff, but we can talk about best or favorite memories.
Oh gosh, there's a few of those.
Yeah, gosh.
I have a few in mind. Like the first one that is when you would give me rides home from school.
Yes.
And we would, and when you would get like towards really close to my street, you would start driving annoyingly slow, just like down the road. I don't know, to like fuck with people.
Yes.
And so that was a fun memory for me. We would have a blast doing that.
God. And it was like every day.
Yeah. It's a daily routine.
Now, looking back, I hate me. Because, you know, you see jerks doing that now that we're older. We just see dumbass kids doing that and we're just like, what the fuck? That was me.
You don't get nostalgic?
Yeah, no, not at all. Gosh, okay.
I think other memories I enjoyed with you is when you came up to Humboldt, because I love Humboldt, and I'm so happy that I got the chance to share it with you.
Yeah, I know, that was great. That was what I was kind of thinking of, too. I know, I tried to think back to, like, when we were younger, but I keep coming back to, like, more of the recent memories. I think we got closer over the last, I don't know, I'm going to say 5 to 8 years.
Yeah, rough estimate.
The reason, I know, but the reason is because you and I made an effort on both parts to keep in touch.
Yeah.
I really, really love it because I like to say that I'm pretty good at keeping in touch with people. You too. You are too. You too are good at that. So my memory, it really, I guess, isn't like a specific memory per se, but it was just the recent wedding we went to for Melissa.
Oh, yeah.
Our late night at the Airbnb, which wasn't really an Airbnb. It was my friend's house. That's right. And did we get sleep?
I think I did. I think you didn't.
Did you go to bed early?
I did. I think I was pretty drunk.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
I was thinking another memory was your birthday that you probably don't remember.
Oh, God, I don't want to.
But somehow I was sober and then you like hit your head on something. And so I was driving you, I drove you to the ER and you were so against it. You were like, so like, no, I don't want to go to the ER. I'm fine. Take me home. And your head was like bleeding pretty profusely. And, but I was like, part of me was like with you because I heard you, you're like, this is going to cost a lot. And I was like, yeah, it is going to cost a lot. So when we got to the waiting room, I asked the front desk for rubber gloves and I took you in the bathroom to examine your skull and try and see if it was really that bad or not.
I don't remember.
I know you don't remember, but I was like trying to see like, yeah, could we, you know, just go, you know, put some ice on it or.
Wow.
So it was really too hard to tell. So we stayed and then you ended up knowing like half the medical staff.
Okay.
I think from like Chili's or work.
I knew two of them, two nurses.
Yeah.
And it was from Bennigan's. I might recall. No, I don't remember it. I'm like trying to think that I remember it, but I don't. And I just remember, I think I only remember being there by like remembering that I saw them, the nurses, and also from the pictures that Gabby took.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then me just looking really sad.
It was a good birthday.
So we also had the same car. Oh my God. The camping trip.
Yeah. That was part of Humboldt.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the camping trip and how I was the zebra.
Yeah. I for now refer to you as zebra. It's Daniel.
I like it. It's cool. All right. So let's get on to a couple games.
Okay.
The first game we're going to play is WWYD. What would you do? And this is a three-parter. If you win $1 million, what would you do? If you win $10 million, what would you do? If you win $100 million, what would you do?
Oh, gosh. I can't even imagine having that money. If I won $1 million, I'd probably use it for, like, really practical reasons, like finishing school and, like, and buying a house.
Yeah.
If it was, what was the next one?
10.
10 million? If I won $10 million... See, these are hard questions because I wouldn't change what path I'm on.
Right.
If I, you know, was blessed with like, you know, this infinite amount of money.
Yeah.
I would still finish school. I might live in a nicer house, but I also might use it towards like some sort of charity or something that I would like. I really want to do those things, but
yeah,
like, I'm pretty broke right now as a grad student. So. Yep. I think that is also my answer. That's my definite answer if it was $100 million.
Yeah.
Like I would like start some foundation.
Yep.
That's a big part of my mission is wanting to give back and sort of like level the playing field.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in this superior income bracket and just kind of perpetuate that economic divide.
Absolutely.
I really don't stand for that shit. So yep. I would want to use it in ways that really gives back to people that are of lower income.
Great answer. That question's good because like 1 million is nothing. You know what I mean? As much as it sounds like it is, it'll go in a blink of an eye. It's like pay off all your school and everything, pay off all that. And I mean, with 1 million, you can't even buy a house. Well,
not in the Bay Area. You can in Denver.
Not in the Bay, not in New York. But yeah, in Denver you can.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like you buy a house and then, yeah, I mean, it's just 1 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
Right.
Great. Awesome. Okay. Next game is the 10-2 game.
Is that some like drug culture reference?
No, just it's like 10 words and two stories, man.
Okay.
Or it can be like 2 o'clock and 10 o'clock, how you drive properly. Come on.
Or how you smoke a crack pipe.
Oh my God, I guess it is, huh?
That's okay, I like it.
Yeah.
Like multiple meanings.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Now you're going to laugh every time you say it.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I never even thought about that. So you and I will both come up with 5 words each. And then from those words, you will tell a story and I will tell a story. And shoot.
Happy. Costume. Growth.
Ooh.
Music. And lamppost.
Okay. My words are going to be cupboard, bone, doctor, alcohol, teeth. Mine's pretty medical.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Okay. We make a story using all these words?
So just use as much as you can. I usually end up using like 6 of those words.
And is this like a fictional story or a...
I mean, as realistic as possible, I guess.
Oh, shit. As realistic as possible. Okay. Should I go first or do you go first?
Oh, you go first.
Okay. I'm thinking that this Memorial Day, I'm going to go to a costume party. And I'm thinking that what would make me really happy is if I go dressed as a doctor. So, you know, that way... when I'm standing under a lamppost waiting for, you know, some cute boy to come throw me a bone, I can say to him, hey there, nice bone.
Oh my God.
And then we'll dance to some music and his bone will have some growth. And the alcohol should probably help de-escalate the growth. Then I can just smile at him with my teeth.
Oh my God.
What was that?
That was really good.
I think I got 9 words.
I think so, yeah. That was really good. All right, how do I follow that one? Okay, so last week I went to Happy Hour and they were playing really good music there. And I met this guy. He happened to be a doctor, and he also happened to be a friend of the manager's. So he was like, oh, hey, let's go to the back. And I was like, all right, what's in the back? And we get to this giant cupboard, and he just pulls out bottles and bottles of alcohol. And so I got really happy, and I was like, oh, cool. We have all this free alcohol. Turns out all he wanted to do was bone, and I just grinned through my teeth and was like, peace out. So that was my story about not so happy, happy hour.
Nice.
Ta-da!
That was a good one.
Oh, yeah.
How you incorporated cupboard. Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. I too, only got 9.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that we got that done, let's get down to business here.
Okay.
Okay, well... we're going to jump right to it. So tell me all about childhood, growing up, family, whatnot.
I had a pretty good childhood growing up. Like, I had a really supportive family, kind of like that nuclear family where we have a really nice house and I have parents that loved me and nurtured me, a brother, a sister, a dog. We were a very sports-oriented family. I first was in competitive gymnastics and then later on played softball and volleyball. Yeah, I used to be really tiny. And so I had that perfect like gymnast body type.
When did you grow?
In like eighth and ninth grade.
Okay.
Before we met.
Yeah. I just only knew you as this tall girl.
Yeah, no, I used to be the tiniest. Oh. I used to be the tiniest little thing. Yeah, like I used to get made fun of a lot when I played the other sports like softball because of how small I was.
Oh, wow.
But when you start getting into a team, you have to go every single day. And so then I couldn't really play any other sports if I committed to that. So I quit gymnastics.
Yeah.
Let's see, with school, I had some underlying struggles with school and with learning. Like the academic environment that I was brought up in felt very competitive. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that was part of that is although I was like this majority as a white person in society, the schools that I went to were mostly Asian ethnicities.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt pretty academically inferior because I totally bought into the stereotype of like Asians being smarter. And then it also centers from like my own upbringing. My dad is kind of a nerd. He's really naturally intelligent. He was a software engineer, went to Stanford, and he held like a lot of high expectations around school and sports. These were pretty ingrained values for me at a young age, which I'm really grateful for now in my life. But when I was younger and I struggled in school, it kind of sucked.
Yeah, I bet. Okay, well, let's talk about going to school, kind of your social life with friends through childhood, adolescence, and going into your young adulthood.
I think my struggles in school kind of affected my self-esteem and also emotionally. And I think that kind of impacted my confidence in developing friends when I was really young. But then my athleticism helped me a lot with that.
Right.
I guess I always excelled in sports, and that helped me develop friendships too.
Yeah.
That was more comfortable. That and humor. Like, I've always been sort of quirky, and people like when you're a little weird, just not too weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually went through a hard time with relationships and with friends and like in high school. I think that coupled with like pressure of doing well in school, when I felt like I sucked at it, and pressure to do well in sports, which I also felt like I wasn't good enough at when it became more competitive, kind of did a number on me.
Okay.
And I really had a lot of like yearning for acceptance.
Yeah.
And I think due to those feelings of like insecurity and rejection and really wanting to fit in, kind of influenced drugs encompassing my life through most of my teenage years. So I would say that drugs are probably what I had the closest relationship with when I was in high school.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was a big part. So yeah, what did that look like? How are you exposed to that? And how did that take a hold of your life?
I think one reason I was exposed to it so closely is just kind of the culture of living in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was pretty pervasive in that area, and it was growing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got into it with like the intention of, oh, this is just going to be a one-time thing. But the drugs that I was attracted to like weren't those types of drugs.
Right. Yeah.
And then little did I know too, like I was diagnosed with ADHD when I finally got off of drugs. So there is a lot of self-discovery around like why stimulants in particular were so attractive to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of got to a point where I was dependent on them to feel normal.
Right.
But it also kind of went over the edge to straight abuse.
Yeah. So how did you come to the realization that it was a problem and that you needed to stop?
I think because it just got to a point where I wasn't having fun doing it anymore. I think that was the huge realization was, oh, I'm doing this because it's a habit for me to feel normal and to go do normal things. But I really didn't like who I'd become in order to try and be who I thought I needed to be for other people.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I completely kind of lost myself in that experience. And that was sort of the bottom for me where I was like, yep, I need to like come clean with myself and with my family. And yeah.
I mean, the crazy part of it all is that you, in the midst of doing those drugs, and you were still keeping up with sports and like your life in general were pretty intact. And I mean, I'm like still in awe, and I'm so thankful that you were able to do that, because you had something really to go back to and really that made you have to recover for.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I attribute my privilege in life to my recovery. I think that, you know, having the foundational support that my family gave me, having not a lot of other hardships in my life aside from, you know, struggling in school.
Yeah.
Like I was able to bounce back and, you know, go to meetings and go through a recovery process where I never relapsed. And I, you know, that's not a story a lot of people that are addicted to meth for 3 years have. Like, you know, that kind of just shines through the point that, you know, I had a lot to help me through that.
Yeah.
And then also, like you were saying too, I had things to look forward to, which is also a reflection of like the way that I was brought up with a lot of privilege to be able to play competitive sports and then nurture that talent.
Yeah.
So I had that in front of me, a softball scholarship for college.
Right.
And I think that was a huge realization of, you really need to get your shit together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not, you know, throw these opportunities away.
How did that conversation go with your parents? I mean, because you went to them, right?
In a way, it was kind of interesting. Actually, like a friend went, like who was concerned about me, went and told them the night that I was coming to come clean with them. So there was it was a total shit show at first, because that, you know, like my parents are freaked out.
Yeah,
they don't know what's going on. They're just super scared and concerned. It caused a lot of distrust in my relationship with my parents.
Yeah,
I think that was the hardest thing. Was
right.
Being in recovery and being clean and doing all the right things, and then still being suspected of like doing the wrong things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I work with a lot of people in recovery now, and that's something that they always say is like, well, what's the point? Like, if they don't believe me anyways, then I might as well just go get high. And I can totally relate to that sentiment.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it really gets to a point of, you know, you're doing it for you.
Yeah.
And you're also doing it to rebuild those relationships. Like, that's the whole point of getting sober is to like rebuild those connections with authenticity, for it to be really real and genuine.
Yeah. So after that, you get your scholarship to college for softball. Tell me about college.
I don't know. College was intense. I was very focused on my identity as an athlete. I played at Humboldt State University, which is up in Northern California. And our softball coach was super militant. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, if you asked for water, you had to go run. And he'd be like, or if you like made a mistake, he'd be like, start running till I tell you to stop.
Oh, wow.
And he was also kind of old.
Yeah.
So then he would forget about you. And like, you'd be running for like 2 hours. And
oh my God. That's gonna
It was brutal.
Yeah.
But it took a lot of work and dedication. It was all worth it. We were a pretty badass team, and we won a national championship.
Yeah.
In 2008, which is like 10 years ago now, which
wow.
is crazy.
That is crazy.
I mean, it really is amazing, like thinking about coming from where I was at in high school to like, then I'm this national championship softball player who got straight A's. I think that
wow.
was like a big thing for me, was when I did go to therapy for like the fourth time towards the end of high school when I was getting sober. I got diagnosed with ADHD, and, you know, that was never really acknowledged in my childhood because I did just well enough for it to kind of fall through the cracks,
yeah.
you know? So that gave me like a lot of clarity around like what was quote unquote wrong with me.
Yeah.
And after I was put on medications and also learned a lot of, you know, different behavioral strategies to accommodate for the things that were the most challenging for me because of my ADHD,
mm-hmm.
I really started to do a lot better in school. So it wasn't because Asians were smarter.
There you go. You've cracked it.
Yes, I've relinquished that stereotype.
Yes.
But yeah, I think, and I studied psychology.
Yeah.
I think I just really developed this passion for wanting to help people.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to be a counselor of some sort, and had some like bumps along the road to get to where I am now, like back in graduate school and working on my PhD in counseling. But I think a lot of them made me a lot stronger and reinforced my path in life towards being a therapist and towards being a psychologist.
So tell me why you decided to go the psychology route. Like, what made you want to help people in that way?
I definitely think my own experiences initially drove that interest. I just kind of always became interested in brain and human behavior and psychology and, like, you know, how it all works, like why people do the things that they do and, you know, what makes people happy and what derails that and how do people move back into a place of wellness.
Yeah.
I think what really drove me towards where I'm at now with pursuing a doctoral degree was my experience in Northern California working with pretty like marginalized clients that were in medical settings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just like how I kind of fell through the cracks, you'd see even more so how people who are very underprivileged
right.
fall through the cracks. Like all of these different, you know, social systems, medical
right.
system. And I just saw how hard it was for them to be able to get their physical and psychological needs met.
Yeah.
to like access high quality care. And that's what made me really want to go back into school and into the field and to develop more skills so I can make changes, not just on an individual level, but more on like a societal level. Mm-hmm. Like I'm definitely interested not only in working with people one-on-one, but working towards policy change and system change.
In Humboldt, at what capacity were you working with these people?
I would work really close with them. I'd meet with them in their medical appointments or accompany them to medical appointments. And I would see sometimes them be mistreated or like labeled as, you know, like non-compliant by medical providers who didn't really like understand the patient's worldview and where they were coming from as far as like their life circumstances. Being told to use a CPAP machine when you live in the fucking woods and don't have anywhere to plug it in is kind of hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, just things like that kind of really drove me. And then also seeing how much physical health and mental health intertwine.
Yeah.
Pretty much everyone I was working with had chronic health conditions, and it takes a toll on you mentally. Mm. And there's a lot of research that shows that when you have any sort of mental health condition, that it's harder to take care of your physical health. There's more barriers to it.
Right. I can see that.
I think that like interplay, that intersect, something that I was really intrigued to learn more about and to be able to help people, both fronts, like not just with physical health over here and mental health over here, but like in an integrated care aspect where you address both of them at the same time.
Right. No, absolutely. So right now you're going to school for your doctorate degree. What exactly is it, and how does that play into what you just talked about?
So I will have a PhD in counseling psychology.
Okay.
Which basically just means I did a shit ton of school and I have to take comprehensive exams. I have to write a dissertation. And I mean, what else does it mean? For me, it means that I will have the capability to not only work directly with clients, like doing counseling, mm-hmm. but I would have the ability to be in positions like as a behavioral health director of a primary care clinic or something like that. So it gives me more opportunities and options. I see those as being able to affect more change.
So last year you worked in the jail system. This past year you worked with...
Yeah, and part of my program is we do these different externships or practicum experiences. So basically like clinical rotations in different agencies or community organizations where we do counseling with people. And last year I was in the jail, the Denver County Jail. And then this year I'm in a community mental health setting.
At what capacity are you working with them, and like what kind of help are you providing them?
So in the jail, I did one-on-one therapy with men and with women. And then I also ran some groups in the men and the women's dorms. And I would say that it was quite an anomaly to like come across someone who didn't have pervasive childhood trauma in the jail. I wasn't always working with folks to address that, kind of depended on like where they were at.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was just working on helping them build emotional awareness and regulation skills so that they could begin to have like coping skills so they could later address trauma.
Yeah.
I also worked with a lot of folks, you know, who had addictions, and worked with folks on developing healthier relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Those were kind of the main things that I would see and work with in the jail. And then in the community mental health setting, you see a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
But I would say that in the community mental health setting, I actually see more broad range of, you know, presenting issues that people are coming in for. I work with folks who have pretty severe and persistent mental illness like schizophrenia. And then I have people who are just coming in because they're having relationship discord. And, you know, some people, you know, we do stuff really short term, and then other people it's been more long term. But we stay at our externships just for three quarters.
Okay.
Three consecutive quarters.
Yeah.
So it's usually about a 9-month stint or so. And then, we switch to a new one.
That's kind of rough on the people, no? Because you guys are there for 9 months and then you're just out.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And it's rough on me too. Like, well, I'm sure, one thing that's like super rewarding about therapy is like the relationship building. I feel like it's, you know, goes both ways, not just for the clients, but for me as a therapist. Like, those relationships are super meaningful to me. And it sucks to like part. But at the same time, I think it's a really unique experience where a lot of people that you work with, they've never really had a relationship end in a positive way. And then this is like, this is a totally new experience for them where you can actually like have a good goodbye and, you know, talk about, you know, how meaningful the relationship has been and what's been like really important and what you liked about it and what you'll miss and like what you're going to take from it moving forward.
Right.
Even though therapy comes to an end and it is hard for people to, you know, deal with that transition, I think it gives them a new experience that they haven't had that also promotes growth.
Do you go to therapy?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you listen to all these people's stories all day. You would go crazy if you don't. How does that help? And you've been, how long have you been going?
I mean, and I have my own shit I got to deal with too.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can be present with my clients without bringing my own stuff into the room.
Right.
I've been on and off with therapy throughout my life. Like, I was forcibly put in it in high school a few times and then like finally agreed. And that was like the first time it actually went well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in college, I sought it out just, you know, to kind of deal with the stress of playing softball, going to school, trying to time manage and like the emotional impact that I think ADHD has is like, it just makes shit frustrating. Like, I can't tell you how much time I spend looking for things that I like, trying to remember where I put stuff.
Yep.
Or like, that's a daily thing that I probably waste at least an hour trying to find things. Like, that's, it's the worst part of ADHD.
Yep.
So then when I came out here, it's, you know, some programs, they require people to be in therapy.
Yeah.
And then other programs just encourage it. Our program encourages it, but I see such a merit in it because I think for me, like you said, it's so important to be able to check in with yourself when you're providing a space for people to unload some pretty heavy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I have to do a lot to practice self-care and to kind of like compartmentalize that before I go home at the end of the day so that it's not like stuck with me. Mm-hmm. I feel like my therapy, I don't know. I went to one therapist out here and she totally sucked.
Yeah.
It was just like a, I don't know. The first gal just was like really shaming and like wanted to give me a lot of advice and tell me all the things I was doing wrong. And I'm like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Cool. You suck.
Yeah.
So I found a different one and that's been a good relationship. I haven't seen her since like September, October or something like that of last year. I could probably go like benefit from going more often, but it's really tough to like just with all the obligations of being in a doctorate program to fit it in.
Yeah.
Like, self-care seems to always come last.
I know, right? Even though that should really be the first thing, right?
Yeah, I know, especially in like a fucking counseling psychology program. We always joke about this stuff.
Yeah. Or,
like, we always joke about how, like, we're always being preached, like, to do self-care, and we always talk about it to our clients, and then it's, like, something that we can't always fully model because we're kind of in the thick of being PhD students.
Yeah. I mean, it almost seems like you going through the struggles that you did so early on, it seems like it worked out that you went through it earlier on, right? Because a lot of people kind of get into it in college or after college.
Yeah. My early struggles have like kind of informed my experience and like helped me get to where I am. I mean, I've had bumps along the way with life.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. I think a lot of them have made me stronger and reinforced my path in life towards being like doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, and plus you, like you said, you have not relapsed. Like, that is such a rare thing, especially when somebody goes through something like that so early on. as you get older, it would seem it'd be easy to just be like, well, I'm older now. I can probably manage it. Why don't I just dabble here and there? You know, but you just didn't. You've been pretty straight and narrow, Chrissy.
I've been all right. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm fucking saint.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten into like an addictive pattern with any substances. Like, you know, my recovery story isn't completely about abstinence. It was for a good 2 years.
Yeah.
From everything, but I drink socially now and I have fun doing it, but it doesn't work that way for everybody, you know, but it can for some. Like, I think it's all about figuring it out.
Yeah.
I've had addiction come into my life in other ways. Like, for example, with Justin, I fell in love with a guy that struggled with addictions and I lost him to his addiction while we were still together. And that was fucking tragic. That was probably like the hardest emotional experience to overcome. It was like losing someone you love is way worse than getting off drugs.
Yes. Not to make you revisit that, obviously. It's a hard thing to talk about. But how did you pull yourself out of it? How was that process?
So shitty. I was completely bereaved and pretty depressed for a couple months. I mean, to make matters worse, so his family lived in Bali at the time.
Right.
And as part of my process, I actually went out and stayed with them.
Yeah.
Which was such a great experience. I had been at the job I was at for about 3 months. It was a transitional living program for families that were homeless, you know, so the whole like mission is to like help people when they're in the hardest parts of their lives.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you know, take the time you need, do what you got to do. I was gone for about a month and tried communicating with them like while I was away.
Yeah.
Then when I got back and I was like, thank you so much. I feel so much better. Like I can really take my experience and like use it with clients. And then they like called me in to meet with the HR and like the manager supervisor, and they had given my job away.
Oh shit.
So
wow.
Yeah, so there I was like with adjusting to one, you know, major life transition of losing my partner to then losing my job too on top of that.
Right.
And Jesus. I was just like, holy fuck, really?
Yeah, so what did you do?
You know, so I was kind of at a fork in the road where I could have easily like rolled over and used that experience to just encapsulate me in hopelessness.
Yeah.
Probably could have just been like, this is the perfect excuse to go get fucking loaded.
Right. Yeah.
But I knew I had that option, or I knew I had this other option of that I could use this as an opportunity and as a challenge towards like post-traumatic growth and to find a better job.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. Like I, you know, hadn't experienced being laid off before either. And then like trying to motivate to do all the job searching activities when you're super depressed was really hard. But I like made a goal with myself that I was like, I'm going to be productive for at least, you know, 7 hours a day, just like if I had a job. And I counted being productive as like working out was part of that. But then like job searching was another piece of it. So I just like used that time to really zero in on focusing on me and focusing on finding a job that I was going to be even more happy at. Yeah. I also like went through this healing journey over the next year with my mentor, who is like this Hopi Navajo man. I had reached out to him when Jess passed away.
Just like a personal mentor?
Yeah. I worked with him when I was interning in the public health department at the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Prevention Program. Mm-hmm. And he is a native man. He's Hopi and Navajo. Mm-hmm. I guess I was really interested and intrigued with Native culture because I knew that that was always a part of my heritage, mm-hmm. but I didn't grow up with that as part of my upbringing. Mm-hmm. And so when I was done playing softball in college and kind of like my main salient identity as an athlete was not there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I started trying to like tap in more to what are my other identities?
Right.
Like, who am I if I'm not an athlete?
Yeah.
So I've developed more of an interest in, you know, just learning more about my native culture. He was super instrumental in that. He was more instrumental part of my healing from losing Justin.
Yeah.
He kind of like took me under his wing and he walked me through this 1 year process of healing where for a year straight, we spent 3 months focusing on spiritual, 3 months focusing on mental, 3 months focusing on emotional, and 3 months focusing on physical, like recovery and well-being. And it was really cool. And he exchanged a lot of like teachings and stories about Native culture, about their philosophies, about, you know, stories that he grew up with. It was such a gift to me for him to share that, and such a huge part of my healing process and also like my identity development too.
Right. So was that after Bali?
Yeah.
Because you went to Bali soon after Justin passed.
Yeah.
What brought on that trip?
So his younger sister was going out there, and I felt like I really just needed to embrace the time and spend it with his family. Mm-hmm. These people who like knew him and loved him underneath all of the addiction.
Yeah.
I felt like I just needed to have that connection and that time spent to like honor his time on earth.
Yeah. And how do you think that helped in the healing process over if you were to stay in Humboldt?
I think it really brought me closer to Justin in a lot of ways, to know on a deeper level, like where he came from and, you know, his family. I mean, I consider them my family. Mm-hmm. We're not always in touch. I mean, I see them on Facebook and follow them. You know, it's tough being out here in Colorado. Most of them live in Oregon now, but I feel like they'll always be a part of my life.
Yeah.
Because Justin will like indefinitely be a part of my life.
Right.
I mean, I think it's like, even though I lost him, I still gained a lot from my relationship with him.
Yeah. How was that relationship? And like, while he was going through that struggle, because you were already kind of in jobs that was dealing with situations like that, right? Like people who were addicted to drugs.
Yeah, there was a chunk of time when he was doing okay. And then things were just very like up and down, high and low.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting for me having all the knowledge around like substance abuse counseling. And then it seems like such a conundrum to like have this substance abuse counselor who's in a relationship with somebody with an addiction.
Yeah.
Like from an outsider's perspective, it's like, what the fuck? Right. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you even competent at what you do? Like, I mean, those were like judgments I had towards myself.
Yeah.
Like what I learned through that is that it was a very codependent relationship. I was, you know, very focused on him and what he was doing and not on me. Mm-hmm. I had to build those skills.
Yeah.
It kind of goes to show that relationships, like when you're in it, it's so easy for all of that like rationality and logic to just go out the window and for your heart to take over.
Yeah.
I hate that, but I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that that is useful to be able to remember and reflect back on when I'm working with clients who are staying in relationships that from an outsider's perspective, like, it's like, why are you there?
Right.
Like, but it's not that easy to just to say like, you know, oh, like you'd just be better off if you just left. Right.
Yeah.
People have to figure that shit out on their own, and they have to find that reconnection with themselves to be able to do it.
So that actually kind of leads to what I wanted to ask you. Having gone through your own addiction and also having dated somebody who went through that addiction and eventually losing his life, how do you think that connects to your current job, and how do you think that translates into your job?
I mean, I think it definitely informs my practice and being able to have more empathy both for people with addictions and also for people who love people with addictions.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a really, really tough thing. And it's like not as simplistic as just like cutting them out of your life. I think it's, you know, like addiction is such a complex problem. So there's no simple solution to it. Yeah, at the same time, I have to be very attuned to not thinking that because I have this experience that that's the same as what other people are going through.
Right.
This kind of like segues back to a lot of my privilege in my life and working with a lot of folks like in the jail who've had so much trauma in their lives mm-hmm. and in their childhood. Their run-in with drugs and addiction is like nothing like mine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that I really try and take with me too from this whole experience.
Yeah. I really do love that you keep bringing up that you had privilege, right? Because so many people kind of just talk about their struggles and whatever they went through, and they kind of forget about people who have it worse, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really do appreciate you like having that in your mind all the time as you're speaking to these people, because you're not like, oh, I totally went through that. Like, I know what you're going through. It like the fact that you are not approaching it that way is admirable. Yeah. Okay, so as far as like your own mental journey right now, where are you?
Mentally, I feel exhausted. Grad school is kind of a like mind fuck. There's not a lot of breaks.
Yeah.
I feel like I am just going, and the more that I learn, the less competent I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm like, the more information that I gather, like, the more awareness I have about how much there is that I don't know.
Right. No, I bet.
So mentally, like, it's kind of a struggle, but I also feel very, like, blessed and fortunate to be where I am.
Yeah. So I don't know if you read this question, but one of the questions that I ask everybody is how you feel today, physically, mentally, and spiritually. So that's kind of funny, because when you were telling me about the thing you went through with your mentor,
yeah.
you were listing off those things. So that's something that you're mindful about, right?
I try to be. Like, I think it's important to keep all of those things in balance. Physically, I feel good. I do CrossFit. Like, I feel pretty fucking strong. And I mean, and I think that all of these things are interconnected, you know, like when I feel good physically, I feel much better mentally and emotionally.
Yeah.
Emotionally, I think that sometimes I'm a little stuck in my like mental to like fully experience, you know, like whatever's going on with me emotionally. It's like some of that's on hold right now while I'm in grad school.
Yeah.
You know, I have my moments. I tap into that. There's definitely times where I just like break down and have a good cry and it's super cathartic and then I feel better and then I can like be more present. Spiritually, I feel okay spiritually too. Maybe a little less connected because again, like I think I exert a lot towards my mental pursuits at the moment.
Yeah.
Talking this out now just as a reminder that like maybe I need to bring those into practice a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all in all, I can't complain.
Yeah. Well, that's good. What do you think has been the biggest growth within yourself since your early 20s to now?
I would say being patient with myself and respecting the process. Yeah. I think that's been a big growth experience for me. Like there's this way that I thought that my life should go, and then there's the way it actually went.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't this like linear trajectory. Like I think that there was like a five or six year hiatus from when I planned to go to grad school to like when I actually went.
Right.
And it's okay. It's okay for it to not go how you planned.
Yeah.
That was something that was really hard for me to swallow when I was in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I needed to like have it all figured out and have a big kid job and, you know.
Yeah.
It went how it went.
Yeah.
And I'm okay. Things are all right. Everything's okay.
Good. That's awesome. Can we quickly go to the advice segment?
Okay.
All right. So here's the letter. Dear Christine, my ex of 5 years cheated on me, which caused us to break up. About a year after the breakup, he appeared in my life again and told me that he was secretly going through a substance addiction when that happened. And while he realizes that our romantic relationship is over, that he would like to have me back in his life as a friend. We truly were each other's best friends while we were together, but I don't know what I should do. Yeah. So what do we do?
I would say figure out what your boundaries are. It sounds like the hesitancy around being friends with someone who was your best friend before is because they hurt you.
Right.
I don't know if the concern is like, oh, if I develop this friendship, are we going to get back in a relationship? And then I'm, you know, going to be worried about them cheating on me again or worried about the substance use thing. But I mean, that took a lot of guts to like come clean about all of that. And, you know, I think that time can heal some stuff.
Yeah.
Like this is a great opportunity for you to maybe get some of the healing that you need from how that affected you, because they're, you know, communicating what had happened for them.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, it could really help heal you by being able to reach out and be friends with them again. That's kind of where I would go with it.
Yeah. I guess maybe I'm like a bit more of a pessimist for this situation, because I, in my own life, I tend to forgive people like literally 5 times before I'm like, I can't, you know? But okay, A, how do we know that he's actually clean now? B, how do we know he's not making shit up just because he's planning on somehow using her? C, I don't have a C. I just have the A and the B. But it just seems very, I don't know. And again, if this was to happen to me in my real life, I won't be asking these questions. I'd be like, oh, sure. I'm here for you with open arms. But it's easier to think objectively when you're outside looking in. I don't know. How do you ask for proof of like, are you actually sober?
Have them pee in a cup.
Yeah, I know, right?
Going back to defining the boundaries of the relationship, like what is it that you want? Because if you are thinking, okay, like I might want to be with this person again romantically, then yeah, like, all right, have them pee in a cup. But if you're just trying to rebuild the friendship, I don't know if you have that right.
Yeah.
That might be like a little bit overboard.
Yeah. Cause think about it. They were best friends. Of course, the friendship's not going to start like that right away, but it's like, if it has any chance of getting back to being close friends, isn't there something that needs to be proven before they're given another chance?
Yeah.
But I guess like a drug test is a little much.
Well, I think that that's what would come from interacting with them.
Yeah, but they were in a relationship and she had no idea.
Yeah.
And some things are super hideable.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Maybe get clarity on when I thought that you were clean and you weren't. How did I miss that?
Right.
What was I not noticing? You know?
Yeah, that's a good conversation to have. Yeah. That would be actually a really good way to approach it. Like, how are you doing drugs back then that caused you to break my trust so badly and I had no idea you were doing so? Help me understand.
It could also help them with their continued like recovery if they are actually openly telling people like these are the signs for you to like keep an eye on with me.
Right.
And this is how you know that I might be using again.
Yeah.
You know, like people got to take note of their own like behaviors that are not just addictive behaviors, but the ones that lead up to using.
Yeah. Man, that was a really good question to talk to you about. Thanks for such a great advice. Okay, so I am now going to ask you just a couple closing questions. Okay, so what brings you the most joy right now?
I would say working out. CrossFit has been like this newfound, like, I don't know, like not just like this, you know, experience for me to go like be an athlete, but it's I go to like this all women's CrossFit gym. So it's like
cool.
This community of like these supportive badass women.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
It's my tribe.
That's awesome. Okay. So to somebody out there that might be going through similar hardships as you did in your past, what would you say to them and where would you recommend that they start their healing process?
Be kind to yourself. Figure out what's important to you, and then connect with people who want to support you with that. Especially when you get caught up with drugs, you get caught up with people who like, you think you want the same things,
right.
But really the same things that you want is just like someone to get high with and like,
right.
And be fucking depressed.
Mm-hmm.
and like rationalize it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like people with real like ambitions and values, and I think centering yourself with a community and with those supports that are going to like help you reach those like real, true, like long-term goals,
right,
is super helpful in that healing process. It's not, it doesn't always go perfect, and that's okay.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Just like try again next time, which could be the next day, you know?
Yeah.
Like I think there's always a choice, and we forget that sometimes.
Yeah.
We think if we fuck up a little bit that it's like complete failure. I think that you can always like hit the reset button.
Very good. Well, to sit down and talk to you for like this long and to just hear about your journey, you know, I'm first of all very grateful that you are willing to talk to me and share with me all of this. It just gives me like a newfound admiration for you. You know, I've heard about your hardships as they happened and some after they happened. But it was always just like that one thing that happened and kind of how you felt about it, and that was it. And this time I'm kind of hearing about like how you went through what you went through and how you picked yourself up and just kind of like made your life better from it. And I'm just so extremely honored to be your friend and just so grateful that you're in my life and that I get to be a part of your life. I hope the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's Christine Power.
Christine squared.
So, yeah. So I just wanted to say thank you again for joining me today and that I love you.
I love you too.
And I really hope I see you in real life very soon. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, so that was my conversation with the lovely Chrissy. If you're struggling with addiction, please reach out to somebody. I will have a couple links in the description of the websites that you can visit. Just remember that you are not alone in this world. A lot of people go through things that they're embarrassed to talk about, rather it be addiction or mental health issues or really anything else. So just talk to somebody if you feel like something's not right. Alrighty, well, thank you again. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes. Also, follow me on social media. I am Choice As Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And please send me your feedback as well as your Ask Choi advice segment letters to choiceaspodcast@gmail.com. Okay, well, that is all for today. I will see you guys next week. Okay, thanks. Bye.